William Francis Gibbs is not a household name today, but in the 1940s and 1950s, at the peak of his power, he was considered America's great naval architect. He was profiled on the cover of Time magazine and the subject of three features in The New Yorker. His quest to build the finest, fastest, most beautiful ocean liner of his time, the SS United States, was a topic of national fascination. When completed in 1952, the ship was hailed as a technological masterpiece at a time when Made in America meant the best. Stephen Ujifusa is a biographer who's devoted years of studying the life of William Francis Gibb and has just written the new book, A Man and His Ship, America's Greatest Naval Architect in His Quest to Build the SS United States. It's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen Ujifusa to the roundtable. Thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
What brought you to the attention of William Francis Gibbs?
Well, William Francis Gibbs was someone who I'd heard about as a child. I'd known about the SS United States since I was young. My grandparents traveled on it in the 1950s when she was the finest, fastest, and most popular ocean liner in the world. But when I began researching the life of William Francis Gibbs, I realized that this was a man who was one of the great builders of American history. I believe that he was on par with John Augustus Roebling, the builder of the Brooklyn Bridge, and Frank Lloyd Wright. And like Frank Lloyd Wright, he was very much self-taught. A lot of people know about the SS United States as a famous ship, but as a lot of great construction projects turn out, there's usually a fascinating story involving the people who built the ship. And in the case of the SS United States, there were many great ocean liners built during the first half of the 20th century, but no other ship, I believe, was so closely intertwined with the quest of one individual. And William Francis Gibbs devoted his life to building the ship with an unbelievable passion, which is rare.
What brought him into this fold of being interested in shipbuilding? He went to Harvard, but he was forced to drop out because of his family's sudden financial ruin. He was a very, very shy man. What brought him to this platform?
Well, he knew he wanted to be a naval architect since he was an 8-year-old child. When he saw a ship launched in the cramped shipyards on the Delaware River in Philadelphia, it was an ocean liner called the St. Louis. It was in 1894 that he stood at his father's side and saw this ocean liner, the foremost American ship of its time, slide into the Delaware River. And he said he knew from that moment what he wanted to do. His father, however, did not approve. His father was a very wealthy individual who felt that his son needed to pursue a more practical course of career. But when his family went bankrupt and he had to drop out of Harvard, he made a deal with his father. His father said, you must go to law school to support the family. And Gibbs had to work his way through law school. But then after completing a year of practicing law, his father said, you can go off and do what you want if you really feel this is not what you want to do and you should prove yourself. So Gibbs later said that he never would have amounted to anything if not for his father going bankrupt. But Gibbs got his big break in 1915 when he showed his ocean liner designs for a 1,000-foot-long American superliner to a famous admiral called Admiral David W. Taylor, who was chief constructor of the U.S. Navy. And Taylor looked at this nervy, shy young man and thought, well, this kid has talent. He obviously needs some more formal training, so I will take him under his wing. And that's what launched his career.
You write in the book, and beautifully so, about how much of the story has to do with the America's changing perception of the ocean liner, of ships like Normandy and the Queen Mary, and how they were transformed during the war, and how that travel then came out post-war.
Yes, America really did not invest much money in ocean liners during the first half of the 20th century, and also a lot of the 19th century. America was focusing on internal improvements such as railroads. During the 1940s, the RMS Queen Elizabeth and the RMS Queen Mary, which were Britain's flagship liners, were used by the U.S. government to carry up to 16,000 troops at a time. So it wasn't until then that the U.S. government realized, oh, maybe we should subsidize the construction of our own superliner that would be built as a troop ship first, but be used as a luxury liner. And Gibbs said, I'm your man. I'm the man to design this ship. He had been dreaming about it for almost 40 years. And then the United States Lines, which was the foremost shipping company in America at the time, they had operated a lot of medium-sized passenger ships, said, we're the people to operate it.
It seems in the book that there were many goals, but two of the main goals were speed and safety.
Yes, Gibbs was obsessed with safety. He was obsessed with the Titanic disaster, and he was determined that the SS United States would be an anti-Titanic, that she could survive the same collision or worse that sank the Titanic back in 1912. So the SS United States was designed so that 5 of her 20 watertight compartments could be flooded and she would still sink. She would still stay afloat. And that surpasses today's safety standards. Today, a cruise ship must stay afloat with 3 compartments flooded. The SS United States could stay afloat with 5. And also, Gibbs was very afraid of fire. There have been numerous disasters or close calls with fire aboard ships, especially ocean liners. And Gibbs was determined that the SS United States would have as little wood as possible on board. So the only wood, supposedly, the company advertised, the only wood on board the SS United States was in the butcher's block and the piano, although there were some other splinters of wood elsewhere. But also, speed was important for these ships, especially for a ship that's to be used as troop transport, so that they could evade U-boats. So the SS United States was equipped with engines. These engines could develop 240,000 horsepower. So she had basically the size and luxury of a passenger liner, but the speed and maneuverability of a destroyer, which had never been done before.
It is fascinating in reading the book about how eccentric he was, and one of the things that he was so committed to was that of secrecy. You write in the book, a few months before United States' first trials, Gibbs decided to ensure the secrecy of the ship's advanced technology by making it a national security matter, even during commercial operation. How do you do such a thing?
Well, basically, the SS United States was given the same security levels as any Navy ship. So basically, Gibbs ensured that the plans would not be released to the public. He ensured that the designs of the engines and the propellers would not be released to the public. Other naval architects, especially the foreign liners, were quite happy to publish plans of ships in trade publications. Gibbs was not a fan of that. And unlike other passenger liners, you could not visit the engine room. So this was basically a military ship. Her officers and captain were all in the U.S. Navy Reserve, so should the ship need to be turned into a troop transport, she could be converted into 48 hours and could be outfitted to carry 14,000 soldiers, and she could steam 10,000 miles without stopping. So basically, she could carry an entire Army division to a war zone quickly and efficiently, which was quite an amazing feat.
I thought it was fascinating to read about just how superstitious he was. He would not sit at a table with 13 people. He believed that a woman should not come on until after the maiden voyage. He wouldn't write a letter with 13 paragraphs in it. He was a very superstitious person.
Yes, and that's part of what I think makes him fascinating. He was an eccentric, and he reveled in it. He would not allow women on board during the trials. Only on the maiden voyage would women passengers be allowed on board.
This is a fascinating story in and of itself of the creation of the ship and, of course, of Gibbs. But this story goes on. This ship is still out there and looking for a permanent home.
Yes, in 1969, she was pulled out of service. The jet aircraft had come in 1958, and that contributed to a very steady decline in the number of people willing to take 5 days of sail by ship versus 6 hours by airplane. So she has been sold multiple times. She's been stripped of her furniture, and she now sits in Philadelphia, and she is now owned by a national nonprofit called the SS United States Conservancy. And the Conservancy was given a $5.8 million grant a couple of years ago by Philadelphia philanthropist H.F. Jerry Lindfest. And basically what the ship depends on, her fate depends on a fundraising initiative called SaveTheUnitedStates.org, which allows people to share their stories. The ship carried over 1 million passengers. And so that's a one way of outreach. The other, and the crucial part, is a real estate deal. The ship we are hoping that the ship will be turned into a stationary waterfront attraction in a major American port city, where millions of Americans can once enjoy this great creation, which I believe and others believe is the equivalent of Pennsylvania Station. And once she is lost, you can never build anything like her again.
And Philadelphia or New York would make sense, given that those were homes to Gibb.
Philadelphia and New York are in the considerations, but they're open to all options, provided there's a space for the ship and the project is economically viable.
And as far as the state of it right now, it's pretty much been gutted, right?
Structurally, she is extraordinarily well-built and in very good condition. But the interiors have been pretty much gutted, and the furniture and artwork has been scattered all over the country. And it's strange that in the 1950s, those interiors were greeted with sort of mixed reactions because there was almost no wood on board. Most earlier passenger ships had wood paneling and beautiful plush fabrics. The United States had none of that. But now furniture from the ship has commanded very high prices.
The name of the book is A Man and His Ship, America's Greatest Naval Architect in His Quest to Build the SS United States, telling the story of William Francis Gibbs and the SS United States. It is a fascinating book. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Stephen Ujifusa, I thank you very much for spending time with us, and I wish you all the luck in the world in this project, the book, and of course the restoration of the ship.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is A Man and His Ship, America's Greatest Naval Architect in His Quest to Build the SS United States. It's published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.